Joining me now on the phone is Dan Montgomery. He is the president of the Illinois Federation of Teachers. And Dan and many others are watching a very important court case in the U.S. Supreme Court, Janus versus AFSCME. Dan, thanks for joining me this morning.
It's good to talk to you, Rick. How are you?
I'm better after the Hawks win yesterday. I'll tell you that much.
It's rough year.
Yes, indeed. Well, let's talk about this court case. Basically, before the court is a challenge to a requirement that public employees pay at the very least what's known as a fair share portion of dues to cover non-political activity like collective bargaining and appeals processes and administrative costs. And that fair share fee is the subject of the challenge. Is that a good way to put it?
Yeah. So I want to make something really clear, because you hear union opponents often saying, you know, people are, including Bruce Rauner, saying, you know, people shouldn't be forced to join the union. No one in this country is forced to join a union. But for 40 years plus, the Supreme Court has ruled it's totally legal for unions to charge a fee to the people they legally must represent for purely representational efforts, like you said, like bargaining a contract or administering a grievance, something like that. 20 states allow it. It's up to the states. It doesn't even force it to happen. But 23 states allow it. And those fair share fees are intended to solve a really challenging problem, which is if you don't do that, then you have free riders, as the court said, right? And you've got people who will take all the advantage of the union's work and enforce it, and in fact, you know, the union is required to do this work for them without paying anything. So, and the money they pay has nothing to do with politics. They don't, as you said, don't have to pay for any of the political end of things. So it's the law in Illinois. It's been the law in 23 states. We're talking about public sector workers here now that that this Janus case relates to. And it seems clear that this court, now really tilting to the far right, is prepared to kind of strip away those rights. And unions will have to represent people who pay nothing and are going to lose some voice in the process, no question.
Well, I know that in oral arguments that were held, Justice Kennedy came out very, very vehemently against these fair share payments. And Kennedy has always been kind of known as someone who would be a potential swing vote in a variety of cases before the Supreme Court.
Yeah. He was. I read the transcript. He was just like actively hostile. I mean, it was weird, and the way it was reported, they said he was sort of shouting, and I mean, it's very disappointing. And the other justices made clear, like, listen, this goes against a core conservative principle to let former precedent stand, and you know, the idea of stare decisis, right? Once the court has already decided something, that's the law, and they tend to say, like, we need to keep that law. It's good for the government. It's good for, you know, American polity and jurisprudence to know what the position of the court is. This was decided 40 years ago by a conservative majority on the Supreme Court. It was a unanimous decision, and it's been challenged in various ways since, this idea of fair share fees. And every time they've allowed it, they've upheld it, including Scalia multiple times. So this is a radical right-wing departure in American law if they decide to overturn these fees, which it seems like they will. You know, there, a lot of people have written about this being funded by the Koch brothers, by the Illinois Liberty Justice Center, which is one of those, you know, state policy network groups. These groups together have got about, I think $80 million devoted to this very effort. The Koch brothers have chipped in another $400 million. Bruce Rauner himself has contributed to the Illinois Liberty Justice Center that is kind of prosecuting this case. You probably saw Bruce Rauner actually went to the Supreme Court. This is a governor who has stayed silent on DACA, has stayed silent on guns post Parkland, has stayed silent He wouldn't even call David Duke a Nazi, but he flew to Washington to sit in the Supreme Court and then come out and do a news conference about how important it is to hurt unions. Very, very disappointing.
Well, and this was a case that basically he instigated. There was even the court struck it down, but the attempt by his administration to say that there wouldn't be any collection of union dues.
That's right. Yeah, you're right. That was like one of the first things he did in office in the first week or so. He went to federal court and sued something like 30 unions. He sued our workers, teachers at the Illinois School for the Deaf. I mean, these are incredibly dedicated, highly credentialed people, really doing a tough job in Jacksonville and Illinois, and in a great job they do. In fact, their team just won a Gallaudet University sponsors an academic bowl every year, and their team was one of the finalists. I actually didn't hear the outcome if they won or not, but they went to the finals. Yeah, great place. He sued them so they wouldn't have to pay fair share fees, and you know, the idea there again is we don't want them to have voice and a say at work. It's really mind-boggling, but you know, for all the things Rauner does, he seems most motivated by hurting unions and hurting working people.
Well, one of the things he's said about this is that, as far as public sector unions, that he considers everything they do to be political. And political in nature, including the collective bargaining process, is a political process, is what he says.
Yeah, I mean the courts, including the Supreme Court, I mean, they decided that exact issue 40 years ago and said, no, I mean, you're bargaining. And let me tell you, I became a school teacher, high school teacher. I didn't do it to be in a union, but you know, we were all unionized. We sat together, and you'd bargain wages and benefits, but all sorts of things that have nothing to do with political speech. You know, where's the bulletin board going to be? We have parent-teacher conferences. How do we structure that? I mean, so many things. Class size. I mean, these aren't political. No reasonable person, I think, really thinks of those things as political speech. It's simply they don't want workers to have a voice. That's really what it amounts to. And now they've got enough, you know, really far right wing jurists on the court to think that they've got the ability to overturn this. And again, I really don't think that the Koch brothers and the Rauners are really interested in free speech. They're interested in putting hundreds of millions of dollars behind reducing the voice of people who oppose them on things like, you know, tax cuts for the rich.
Well, what with the expectations that the court will strike down that fair share requirement, what does that mean for the future of public employee unions?
Yeah, they're going to take hit. I mean, it's going to be hard. They're going to have to, again, we're going to have to represent people who don't pay anything for that representation. There will be free riders. I will tell you, I'm encouraged. I mean, we've seen this coming. We're working really hard in our union, local by local, to, you know, kind of get back to the roots and say, listen, we're going to have one-on-one conversations with all our members. They have to really re-understand why we're a union, why we're together. You're never going to get rid of labor unions. You're never going to get rid of people's desire to better their lives and for them to come together collectively to work. There's one of the points made at the Supreme Court was this is quite liable to add to labor unrest. And I think that's true. You know, I remember a few years ago in Illinois, they were trying to SB 7 was the bill, and it's when Rahm Emanuel wanted to make it harder for the teachers union to strike in Chicago, and there was all this stuff. And we did research, and we showed, look, before the public bargaining law in Illinois, 1986, it went into effect, there were a lot more teacher strikes than there are now. There's, honestly, throughout Illinois, any given year now, there's a handful, 1, 2, 3. There were over 20 on average in the years leading up to the public bargaining law. So I think you're going to see more people sort of asserting their power collectively and having to find every way to do it. Look what's happening in West Virginia now.
I was just going to say, yes.
Yeah, that's a right-to-work state. They don't have They don't have collective bargaining quite the same way that we do, or a public labor act like we do. But that's not stopping them from saying we are not going to take their, like, 48th or 49th in the nation in teacher pay. And, you know, they're going to see huge cuts with what they want to do with health insurance there. So unions are just going to have to work harder, go back to their roots, but it will hurt them. I think it will financially strap a lot of unions, and that's the intended goal.
We're speaking with Dan Montgomery, president of the Illinois Federation of Teachers. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. I'm speaking with Dan Montgomery. He's the president of the Illinois Federation of Teachers. We're talking about a upcoming U.S. Supreme Court decision on a case based out of Illinois, Janus versus AFSCME, about requiring public employees to pay a fair share fee for representation by unions. And we've got a question from Ron. Ron, thanks for joining the program.
Yes, good morning, Rich. Dan, common question. Generally, I support collective bargaining. But if there is a perception, and I'm not a right-wing person or anything like that, but there is a perception that, in actual fact, that most unions support Democrat candidates. Okay, and it's always quid pro quo. Well, and then what happens is that a lot of times then these elected officials give out these benefits, and sometimes we can't afford it. So the taxpayers, so I try to contrast that like with the private sector unions, you know, they have to kind of work within their, you know, financial means. But see, in the public sector with government, it's like, okay, well, we can give you all these as we see with some of these benefits, retirement benefits. But yeah, generally speaking, I am one of them. With public sector unions, I've been working 40 years, I've never been in either union. But that's kind of a concern about regular, as they say, working class people, that the unions are getting a lot more than what taxpayers can afford. Thanks, Rick.
Thank you, Ron.
Yeah, I think Ron kind of captured that question well. I'd say a couple things. One, you got to remember that's sort of not what this case is actually about, because unions under fair share laws, none of the fees they collect have anything to do with politics or go towards political money. They can only charge for the costs of, you know, representation. So the constitutional issue isn't what Ron just said, but to Ron's point about supporting Democratic candidates, you know, in my union, we strive and struggle to find Republicans we can endorse, and we do sometimes. There are a lot fewer of them now, and as the Republican Party has turned farther and farther to the right, you know, but we have Republican members, you know, and we do find, and if we look at the issues, it's not based on party politics. It's like, what is their position on our issues, on educational issues, issues around labor, things like that. So, you know, my union, we endorsed Governor Jim Thompson a number of years ago. He was a pretty moderate Republican.
Well, you know? 4 years ago, you endorsed in the Republican primary for governor.
We did, Kirk Dillard, in the Republican primary for governor. And I would posit he would have made a much better governor for this state than Mr. Rauner. So, you know, I understand his Ron's question, but I just think that, you know, one, that's not the constitutional issue at stake here, and that, you know, we'll support more Republican candidates when they support things like reasonable and sane gun laws to protect children in schools, when they support, you know, Bruce Rauner on school funding in Illinois. He's going around claiming he's the guy that's fixed school funding. He then put a hold on the new money that's supposed to already have gone this year, $350 million, to public schools, and they still haven't gotten it because of his gamesmanship. So, you know, we can't endorse those kind of people.
Well, I wanted to switch over to ask you about the governor's budget proposal, and most particularly a proposal to shift the costs of pensions onto teacher pensions onto local school districts. Now, I mean, it seems pretty much to be a non-starter.
Yeah, I mean, But yeah, it does. I agree with you. I mean, Republicans and Democrats alike don't like that idea because it will entail a massive local property tax increase. That's the problem. And I mean, I will tell you that I think if you were designing a retirement plan, a pension plan from scratch, you would have said, look, the members, the individuals got to pay, and teachers do. We pay 9% out of every check toward our pension. And the local employers got to pay as well as the state. So right now, the local employers pay hardly anything. So I understand that's like an equity issue. The problem is you can't just fix that by saying, okay, boom. Here's, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars you guys are going to have to pay now like that. And that's what people are objecting to. And again, the effect of it is going to be a local tax increase, which Rauner, let me see, I thought he was against that.
Well, and that's part of this conundrum here is this issue of everybody wanting to address increases in property taxes and talking of property tax freeze or limitations or those kinds of things, but yet there is, you know, this constant talk on the state level of trying to shift more of the burden onto local governments, local school districts, which, of course, that's where they get their funding is from property taxes.
Yeah, and so when you look at this, I mean, the smart people from the kind of the center and the mainstream of thinking, you know, look at Illinois' finances and say, look, so one of the things we have to do is fund schools with more dollars from the state of Illinois. Illinois was about 48th in the country in state dollars for education. They went a long way toward that last year because they redid this funding formula. But what they didn't do was add in the full amount they need to fully fund that formula, which is in the order of $4 or $5 billion with a B, dollars more every year from the state. And that would get them kind of into the range of normal, if you will. If they did that, that's a tremendous amount of property tax relief because, and it won't happen overnight, but local communities will not have to keep raising their property taxes every year, every few years to pay for their schools because the state will be doing its job. Now, for them to do that, and Republicans and Democrats voted for that bill, for them to do that, to fully fund school funding, they've got to have a different tax structure. We think the best way to do it is progressive tax, have wealthier people pay more of their fair share. That's why we endorse J.B. Pritzker, for instance. It's something that Democrats are saying that's what they want to do in Springfield. You know, it's got to happen in a way so that, you know, middle and lower income people don't end up paying more. And, you know, 39 states already have that, and we should join the sort of modern world and upgrade our tax system that way. If we do those things, you can fund your schools, and, you know, you can relieve the tax burden. And it is true. It is true in Illinois that the property tax burden has gotten too high, and that's simply because the state has not fully funded schools the way they need to.
We see all of the Democratic candidates for governor talking about going to a graduated income tax, but that's not something that can happen quickly, not something overnight, would require a constitutional amendment. And frankly, it's been tried before, and part of the hang-up is because no one wants to put those rates in the Constitution, and there's kind of the people saying, you know, well, if I don't know how much the tax rate is going to be, I'm not so sure I want to be for this.
Yeah, I think a couple things. I think you're absolutely right about that, including our members. They get kind of spooked by that because you don't know what are people talking about, right? So I think, one, it can happen. I think times are changing. I think people are looking around and, you know, they look at the tax cut we had from the Republicans. They look at the world we're in. You look at the Kochs and people like that spending hundreds of millions of dollars against the economic interests of regular working people. And I think the times are right for it, quite honestly. You remember when Rauner was elected a few years ago, I think my numbers are more or less right. He got about 1.8 million votes in Illinois. There was a proposal, non-binding, but a proposal to have a millionaire surcharge tax on millionaires. That got 2.2 million votes, significantly more than the number of people that voted for Rauner were in favor of that. So I think the idea, and I've seen polling around the state that shows people are in favor of the progressive income tax. It's just kind of figuring out how to do it. I think that will happen.
That's Dan Montgomery. He's President and Chief Operating Officer of the Illinois Federation of Teachers. Dan, thank you very much for joining me this morning.
Rick, it's always a pleasure. Go Hawks. Enjoy your afternoon. Let's hope they win today.
Let's go Hawks. Thanks, Dan.